What is up, everyone? This is Alex.
And this is Matt.
And we're back with part two of Inspirations.
I gotta be perfectly honest with this. When I left after we recorded that first part, I went home and just started looking at every video game on my shelf, every book that I have, and every bit of fiction that I really take in, and I was just like, oh my god.
It's everything.
It's bits and pieces.
We pull from too many places.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were out in Boston, and we went down that, like, that really nice neighborhood, that
was
it was perfect for a number of settings.
Like, anything, like, 1920s and up.
Definitely, yeah. And, I mean, it could go anywhere from, like, a cyberpunk game to, it's like that dark, modern, kind of supernatural kind of thing.
Yeah, supernatural. A game that I've been looking at that I haven't told you about yet called Don't Rest Your Head. That seemed the perfect part for that. It's kind of like a noir supernatural.
Okay.
Where people who suddenly can't sleep start seeing things, and then they realize that they're not going crazy. Other people can see it too, and that's...
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's a really cool concept. I'll tell you about it later. All right, so...
Yeah.
Who did we leave off with?
I don't know where we left off, but do you want to go off with your...
Go off with my next one?
Yeah, your next one. I mean, we're doing now the...
Yeah, start
the last five, you know?
Yeah, last five.
I couldn't say top or bottom because they weren't really in any good
order.
Yeah,
no, because I don't know how to order these.
I wouldn't
be able
to.
It's just such a mishmash of everything, of the biggest...
If we said inspiration for D&D or inspiration for a specific game, sure, I can give you an order.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. So... The next one of my inspirations, I would have to say, would be the Alien series.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And definitely one of something that you saw in our first couple sessions of Shadowrun, where it was you, Benny, and the Rigger. You were walking through the hallways, and you just have lots of random noises. Everything was dark, flickering lights.
It definitely all that had that feel.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. The feeling of isolation, no pun intended, for the game.
Yeah.
And not knowing what's behind the door, you know there's something else in the facility with you that you guys expertly never saw, avoided at all turns.
And then the escape.
The escape.
Where it was, like, running across the ceiling, chasing us and stuff.
Yes.
That felt very alien.
Oh, yeah. Where the Rigger actually stuck his head or a drone up into the grate and he saw things... just run by.
Yeah, that definitely had a real, like, Alien 1,
yeah.
Like, the first movie feeling.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite one. That's where I really draw it from. I also love the very industrial feeling of spaceships and facilities. The CCTV kind of future.
Yeah. They're in the ducts and they're...
Yeah.
It's in the vents.
The ducts, the... everything is metal grating. Absolutely everything.
Yep.
You never see an actual, like, person's home in that, but I assume that's industrial grading, too.
Well, I mean, far, far in the future, we still have vents.
Oh, yeah. No, always. Air ducts. Everything is central air.
Oh, yeah. So, for my next one, it's kind of like, I guess these ones are kind of cop-outs for the rest, for me, because they're a little bit more broad as far as inspiration goes. But I guess I can be more specific to the authors, and that's Ed Greenwood. And Bob Salvatore.
Okay.
Bob Salvatore. He does the Dritz series.
Yeah.
Ed Greenwood is the guy who created the Forgotten Realms. So you would be crazy not to use all of that material. Someone did not
silence my phone.
That's standing. but damn it, Matt.
Next. Sorry.
Well, what I was saying is you'd be crazy not to use everything that they have available. And they have so much available. All the pantheons of deities.
God, I know.
All the creatures.
There's a reason it fills books.
Yeah.
Upon books upon books.
So that being said, like, my setting for D&D is a homebrew setting. The continent... the world is all my creation, but there are, you know, I'm not building my own classes, I'm not building my own system or anything, you know, I'm still using the system, I'm still using Forgotten Realms stuff,
yeah.
And then, you know, I'll uphold the deities over, I'll pull concepts over from, you know, I might take, I have my own version of Waterdeep, you know, it's a lot bigger, and it's it's definitely different. It has its own history, but the way it functions, a lot of the things that are in it.
Yeah, the criminal underground aspects, yeah, that kind of thing.
I mean, it's a game, and then you have a city, metropolis kind of situation, where there's an underground, like, crime organization going on. Like, that's any game. So
it's any game, every any game story. Has to have one.
That's any, you know, city, really. I mean, like,
well,
yeah, you know, you look at, you know, the history of Boston, Chicago, New York, I mean, any major city. So with that, like, yeah, it's a little
mishmashy.
Yeah, I guess that's the way to say it.
Bit of this, bit of that. Because I feel like it's really easy to pull inspiration from people or things like that.
Yeah.
Because they have so much that is so ready-made and so well thought out already because they've had the time to complete their ideas.
And flesh it out over time.
Flesh it out so much over so long of a time that is made for this, for that game.
Yeah.
So it's...
You're crazy not to use it.
Exactly.
But I've taken so much inspiration from, especially Ed Greenwood, because this guy, he started working on this, I think, when he was like 6 years old.
Oh my God.
He's from Canada. He actually still works as a librarian to this day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he still works as a librarian. He started, I think the first time he was published was like in his church newspaper, or newsletter.
All right.
And he was writing his short stories for that. His family, like, completely from a young age just supported him through it.
Oh, that's good.
And now he has an entire universe that he's built.
Yeah,
and
multiverse.
And has like a team of other writers who are contracted in to write in his world with him. And I think a lot of things go through his creative control as well, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But he has so many... He's the kind of guy that you could say, hey, name me a small town on the northern isle of here. And he'll be like, oh, well, actually, that's this place right here. And you know, he's like, and then you can ask him something random about, like, the economy there. And he has the economy. He has, like, what the favorite food is, you know, like.
Yeah.
He's got
the last 20 travelers that popped in.
Yeah, he's got the local Denny's, like, top sales. Like, I don't know how he has this time to, but he's been doing it for, you know, over 50 years. Yeah. So it's like.
How much of that is from 1996?
Yeah. So I just definitely a ton of inspiration from them. Especially, I get a lot of inspiration for how I like to describe my combat.
Yeah.
And how I like to get those descriptions. The Dritz series is amazing for that. Because Rob gets into, like, really tight detail on the flourishes of the blades and, like, what they're doing in the combat. Definitely a great motivation if you're looking for... If you're playing, like, a fighter character or you're describing what your fighter does, and it's just... Instead of saying, I swing my sword.
I'm gonna bop him on the head.
Yeah, I swing my sword again.
That's my favorite. Yeah, it's much more of a how do you swing your sword?
Exactly.
What are you doing in the combat? It's like me, Darren, in your game, I love to be all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for stuff to jump up on, like how, like, could I attack him this way, things like that.
Which is great, because for a quick tangent, with D&D, movement is such a weird double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Where the game wants to promote movement at the same time that it, like, discourages movement.
Yeah, it wants you to move in such fantastic ways to get to the spot right in front of the bad guy and stay there.
Yeah. And, like, that's why I like the rogue a lot, because, you know, as soon as you hit second level, you get the bonus disengage.
Oh, the cunning action.
If you play it right, you can play a skirmisher. You're in and out of the combat constantly.
Oh, yeah. And then you can get your movement speed up a little bit.
Yeah.
You can get up in their face, hit them, and then bounce.
So, what's your next one?
My next one is one that I'm not all too familiar with, because it's a video game that I actually haven't actually beaten yet. But it's a video game that people talk about so much, and the villain is very much so the center point of it.
Okay.
As opposed to the setting or the characters or anything like that. And that's going to be System Shock 2.
Never heard of this.
Which you have, I know that you have never heard of it.
What is
it? It is a game that you would not go near.
Oh, okay. So, there it is.
So, in System Shock 2, you play as a member of the Marines. And this is however long in the future. So there you have your cybernetic enhancements, you have your psionic enhancements, and then just regular big beefy guys.
Okay.
and the beginnings of the game is you going through the Marine College or the Navy College, depending. It's a couple different choices, but you go through and you start picking out your stats and whatnot, your beginning game bonuses. Then you wake up on a ship, no memory. As you start walking around, you get attacked by these weird zombies that have a bunch of tubes going into them from different things on their body. And as they're attacking you, they're coming at you swinging lead pipes and everything like that. They're telling you to run away from them. They're yelling at you to get away.
Okay.
They don't want to hurt you, but they're coming at you swinging pipes or wrenches.
I don't want to hurt you, but I'm going to try to hurt you.
Yeah. And you hear, and everything besides stuff like that is you hearing them in horrible pain. Horrible pain. It doesn't sound great. The sound designer did a good job. Well, I guess I could say that that's one of my inspirations because I love disconcerting thing enemies.
Okay, yeah.
Enemies that you just think about, you're just like, what, why, what are you? just the confusion.
A little bit of confusion.
But the necessity of action.
A little bit of guilt.
Yeah, oh yeah. But the main sticking point of System Shock 2 is the enemy called Shodan.
Okay.
She is the big bad. And I'm going to go into some minor spoilers.
Is this a new game?
Oh, no.
Okay.
So. Oh, no. This is ancient. But it's one of those games that pops up on everybody's top 100 lists. GameSpot, IGN, it's just everything.
I think it's a safe to spoil.
Yeah. But Shodan, well, I'll start it this way. When you're starting the game,
yeah,
up until a pretty decent portion in, you're following the voice of some woman. Who's been helping you through, helping you get where you need to go, and just helping you do the things that you need to do to survive. Telling you what's where, what's what.
Okay.
And about halfway through the game, or a little bit more through the game, you finally get to the captain's quarters, or an engineer's quarters, I can't remember where, and the woman's dead. The woman's been dead for a long while.
Okay.
And it turns out Shodan, the person that you thought you were going to fight, that this woman was helping you fight, was imitating her voice. And Shodan isn't actually a person. She's a sentient AI on the ship. Who is... yeah.
Okay.
sentient AI on the ship that has been using you to just go against everything that you thought you were doing. But she's just been playing you the entire time. And you don't know. You're the player. You haven't played the game yet.
Yeah.
So you're just going along with everything. And she's just pulls the rug right out from underneath you. And is just starting to throw everything at you whole hog. And I love the villains that have that twist. That the villains that are smarter than you. Like, you can't get away from it.
Every single thing you did to stop them was helping them.
Yeah. And they were the ones telling you to do that. And you were believing them the entire time.
Yeah.
Kind of like the spy who you've been following the entire time. Or the spy that's been in your midst 100% of the time. So I love those. And System Shock 2 was one of the earlier versions of that being in a big game. They're one of the people that started that kind of trope in video games.
Hmm.
And then not many other people have done it as well since, in my opinion.
I like that. There's a movie that reminds me of that. That was Shia LaBeouf.
Oh God, I can't remember.
And the AI called him, and it was calling and blackmailing people here and there, and getting together everything it needed to, like, shut down the government or whatever the AI wanted to do in that movie.
Yeah, I can't remember that name.
And he was a twin, and his brother died, and his brother had the only
other key to access the thing.
I think it was his thumbprint or his eye or something.
Oh, okay.
So that's why the AI needed the brother.
Yeah. Yeah, it was some kind of weird military AI or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I like those stories too. I like those stories a lot. I don't know. I don't think I'll ever pick up PC gaming. So
everyone on the internet hates you now.
You know.
Another thing about Bioshock. Have you played Bioshock?
No.
Rapture, City Under the Sea?
Nope.
You should play Bioshock.
I think I thought I tried Bioshock.
You should play Bioshock.
Was there a steampunky version of it at some point? Okay, I think it was 3.
Okay, yeah, you played Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah, I tried that on the PS3.
At some point, I'm getting you to play Bioshock, because you would super appreciate the world building and just the characterization in Bioshock. Not to mention, it's a great game. Even just from a gameplay aspect.
Oh, definitely. I've heard it's a great game. It's just that I'm really picky of games I play when it comes to, like, video games.
Yeah.
Really picky.
Okay. No, you'll like Bioshock.
On the other hand, like, tabletop stuff.
Yeah. Just I'm down.
Yeah.
hey, you want to play this game? It's a pen and paper. Yes. I haven't even told you. Yes.
No worries. I just...
All right. So what do you got?
All right. So for another one, I've gotten a lot of good stories I've done, or like one-shot adventures that have come from these, is Disney movies.
Okay.
I've taken Disney movies and perverted them back to the, like, my version of probably what their Brothers Grimm, you know,
okay.
origins were.
Yeah.
And made an adventure out of it. So, for example, when Beauty and the Beast came out, went to see it with the wife. It was a decent movie. And then I was thinking, I want to make this into a D&D adventure. What if all of the talking things in his house, those are all mimics? What if he's, like, this big, like, werebear or something, and he's not actually a good guy? What if he was just the Beast?
Okay, so, like, pre-Bell showing up, he's still, like, all homicidal.
Not even, like, his storyline. He was just a bad person as a noble who got cursed, and you're the adventuring party.
Okay.
That this girl, Bell, or, you know, whatever I renamed the girl to be.
Yeah.
But Belle gets taken, you go to help the dad, and you guys are the, like, you're the heroes that go. And I even put Gaston in there as this character, but he was, like, the way he was a big fraud. So he's like, yeah, of course I'm going to go. I don't even need them. And that guy, however it plays out during your, you know, your run through,
yeah.
he might die or run away or just run off. But, you know, I didn't like Gaston to be, like, good in any way.
Yeah,
you know?
No, it's Gaston still needs to be, like,
he needs to be a jerk.
Yeah.
And he needs to be irrelevant, because it's not about him being the hero. It never was. It's about the heroes coming in, making their way through, and, like, the adventure I made starts off you guys basically getting, like, the help wanted poster. You know, you guys find your way there to help with this problem. This girl's been kidnapped. You go through this chase scene with a pack of wolves to get there, just all like right. the movie.
Yep.
And then you start interacting with the environment and all the mimics.
Yeah. All
and
right.
just
yeah. And I can see
throw
where this is going.
A couple battles of the mimics in there. I put a lot of, like, environment conflict in there, where it's kind of like a race to get out of this tower, because as you are fighting him, he's trying to escape. He's tearing down, like, you know, blocks as he's going, and the place is starting to collapse from an explosion or something. Whatever happens, and it forces you to go through, save this girl, and kill this big bad. I made it, I think it was like a level 10 adventure, one shot. You know, you could do it in one or two sessions, depending on how much time you take with it.
Yeah.
And it was just this real fun, it just stemmed from, what if Clockwork, or, oh, I can't remember their names. God.
Lumiere and Cogsworth.
Cogsworth, not Clockworth. So what if Lumiere and Cogsworth were mimics?
Yeah.
What if the chair you sat down on was a mimic, you know? Like, and there was a point with these two doors, and I took something from, was it Alice in Wonderland when she's talking to the doorknob?
Yeah.
Like, or even better, it was a little bit of that and a little bit of the labyrinth.
Okay.
With the doors given the riddle. So, you know, which one do you go through or how to get through? Just the doors, like, had two personalities that conflicted with each other. They hated each other because they're sat, like, across the hall from each other. So, like, trying to find where their keys are to get through the doors and go up the two different wings of the house or the mansion. So, yeah. So, Disney... Jesus. So, Disney was a real big inspiration with their movies to make adventures out of. Just because they have a great story that came from something that was a bit more morbid in the first place. So to kind of take it and play telephone with it and make your own version.
I can see
just,
that.
It became like a fun little exercise for me to do.
All right, yeah, I can do that. I can see that.
What's your next one?
My next one, it's another video game. I'm sure you can see patterns developing here.
That's fine.
And it's something that you haven't really gotten to see yet, because I haven't had a chance to really flex it.
Okay.
But it's something that will be coming up in Shadowrun. And my inspiration is the Resident Evil series.
Okay. Yeah, we talked about that in the last game.
Yeah. More specifically, 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
Just because, not that the other ones aren't a good games, other than 6. I don't care, I'm not chilling for 6. That game was terrible.
Fair enough.
But more so 1, 2, and 3 for the survival horror aspect of it, and the better handled atmosphere, if you ask me.
Okay.
And it's really the atmosphere in the sense of being alone in a large environment, as opposed to being sequestered into a single building, and then there's the one thing that's chasing you. It's you're in a city with lots of things that want you dead, that want your giblets. And one of the scenes that specifically I was playing with was being trapped in a 50s-style diner.
Okay.
You know, chromed out accents, red stools, the racer top, kind of a bar top for the old school like breakfast diner.
Yeah.
Or some trucker diners that you'll see out on the highway going out west nowadays. Or if you've seen the movie Legion.
God, it's been a while. Yeah, but I remember Legion.
Yeah, the truck stop.
Yeah, it's about the grandma angel demon thing on the ceiling. Yep. Yeah.
Something like that. But trying to survive in a post-apocalyptic city with the diner as your base.
Okay.
And how do you keep something from seeing into a diner? The diner's
all glass
front
windows.
Wall is 90% window. where are you storing things? How are you keeping yourself defended from other people who survived? Kind of deal. The zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
Kind of deal. And I really like that, and I feel like Resident Evil handled it in my favorite way, not necessarily the best, because let's face it, Resident Evil, cheesiest dialogue, cheesiest stories,
from what I know,
oozing cheese, just easy cheese all over the place. But it's probably one of my favorites because it's not just zombies. They took the virus, the constructed virus aspect of zombie apocalypse, and kind of ran with it, and there's several different viruses that result in several different mutations depending on the genes that a person has or what creature it gets into.
Oh, okay. Alright.
I'm sure if you thought about it for a second, you could remember the Licker from the Resident Evil series. Crawls around on the ceiling, brains exposed, super long tongue.
Oh, okay, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. That is a special strain of the virus that makes the zombies.
Okay.
So that's the same.
Yeah.
That's the same virus as the regular zombies. So it's how, but it changes depending on who it infected. And then you have the big giant lizard monsters, which are the hunters, which are horrifying in all aspects of reality.
It's one of those games.
Terrible.
It's one of those games I might have played a little bit once when I was a kid. Yeah. I just never gone back to it.
Yeah, you should. I'm going to get you back into video games.
If I had the time, the only way I'm able to play games is like D&D.
Yeah.
I schedule it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I block out this Wednesday from this time to this time.
And nothing's happening.
And nothing in between.
But I take a lot of encounters that I want to do at this point that I necessarily haven't had the chance to from Resident Evil. It's a good series to pull from, if you ask me.
Well, it sounds like it. Yeah. And a lot of people love that game.
Oh, yeah.
That series games.
No, I don't even want to say that it's a cult classic. It's just a classic series at this point. So what do you got going on behind your little screen over there?
Well, I think the next one to go with would have to be Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit as well.
Okay.
So from the books to the movies, actually, it's funny. I never got into Lord of the Rings when I was a kid. When it came out, I was, which is one of my next ones, is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I got to see the Harry Potter movies. I read all the books. I knew nothing about Lord of the Rings. I didn't watch them, actually, until maybe a couple years ago.
Oh, all right.
I actually got to see everything in order from The Hobbit.
Oh, that's right. You started with the Hobbit.
So, yeah. So, like, and you know what? I know it's like, it seems like a sin, but I like the Hobbit movies better. And I think it's just because I'm so used to the Marvel kind of model.
Yeah.
And they have a much more Marvel feel to them and the way that they're done.
Definitely.
And I have a great appreciation for the Lord of the Rings movies. They're good. And I've actually listened to the audiobooks, and I like Tolkien is able to create an amazing world with a rich, detailed history. I think that he details too much half the time.
Yeah, that's the big problem with him, is that he writes like a historian.
I think he was, though, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was. He was.
I mean, this whole book series came out of him just doing a college project or something, wasn't it? His dissertation?
Something like that.
So, that aside, though, what he built up for a world like I pull a lot of the cultural elements from his writing and everything into my games.
Yeah,
because I the tropes are fun. They're a lot of fun to put into games.
They really. So again, it goes into something that's like he has so much that is there. It is constructed. It is good. It is a solid foundation. You can take that and then build on that. It's very easy to pull.
Why wouldn't you use it?
Exactly. So. Unless what you had is something that you wanted to be, you wanted it to be so different.
Yeah.
From like the basic building blocks.
But that was that's an easy one. I mean, I think plenty of people have pulled from Lord of the Rings.
Oh yeah.
That it's definitely an easy one to name off.
Definitely.
So what's your next one?
My next one is I'm already almost done. Did I talk about The Thing yet?
The Thing.
Yes. John Carpenter's The Thing.
No. No? Or did you?
I think we talked about it before podcast because I was telling you about what was on my list.
I think so.
And then you were just like, The Thing? What's that?
Yeah, you know what? And every time you mention it, it takes me a second to remember what it is.
But then when you do remember, if you haven't watched it, I'm not leaving this house until you watch it.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
Okay. You just want me out of your house. I'm on to your tricks.
Aren't you staying?
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Whoops. I just want you out of my basement.
God damn it. Anyways, John Carpenter's The Thing. Probably one of the primo examples of a preternatural body horror.
Yeah.
It is an awesome example of horror that just confuses. It's and paranoia. That confusion is threatening.
What I like about it...
And the paranoia. Yeah.
Is it's the paranoia. It's the not being able to trust a single person around you, and everyone feels like they're isolated from each other.
Yeah.
In the same room.
It's also a great example of an OP monster.
Oh, yeah.
It can turn into whoever it wants. It has that person's memories. It knows what that person is like. It knows how to pass off as that person.
So, I'm gonna put it out there for you. You take this... You know, you love this movie. You can take this concept and do this in a game so easy.
Oh, yeah.
With a doppelganger.
Oh, yeah.
Just and if it's not carnival. Powerful enough, make up an ancient doppelganger or something. You know, it's a super powerful one. Yeah. And there you go.
Go to the carnival.
Oh, God. Is that what that was going to be?
Oh, well, that's one of the things.
I don't like doppelgangers.
I do.
Like, I've used them in my games. They're great.
You're not going to like my doppelgangers.
Probably
just,
not.
Just throwing that out there. Because doppelgangers, to me, are one of the underused kind of monsters. Or, are not underused, but underpowered.
They're underappreciated.
Underappreciated.
They either get used, and it's a huge cop-out.
Yeah.
Or they get untouched, because people don't want to do a huge cop-out.
Yeah. And I feel like if... Especially if you're using it for, like, a downtime kind of villain. It's like the PCs have to lay low for a little while to kind of let things blow over. It's like, alright, are we just going to blow over this time? Or I could just throw one of these in, have this guy play with them for a little bit, mm-hmm. and I can have him bounce out afterwards if they don't kill him. And then be a returning, like, little annoyance.
Oh, yeah, and they can get away so easy.
Oh, yeah. Nah, it's... You lose sight of him for 3 seconds, it's over.
Yeah.
it's done. Unless you're going to murder everyone on the street.
Because at that point, if they can become whoever they want to be, they know everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Like, they're that guy that's been bringing you your lunch every day.
Oh, yeah. They're the person that you've been conspiring with to lead a resistance force.
Yeah, so evil.
Oh, yeah, no, it's so evil, and it's awesome, and I love it. Especially considering one of our Shadowrun players has dropped out.
Yeah.
You should go to the carnival.
No. You know what? I will play a one-on-one with you. No problem. Yeah, no problem. I'll do that. You want to tell a story? Fine. Let's go do it. I'll have just as much fun.
Yeah.
We just need a couple packs of beer.
How drunk can we get before we just start making random noises at each other and think that we're playing?
I I mean, I was thinking like a step back from that. It was how long is it going to take for us to have a full like party at the table, but it's just the two of us.
Oh, God. Probably far too soon.
Probably.
Probably far too soon.
So, my next one, and I mentioned it before, is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And I loved the series. It was great. The books were amazing. The movies were, you know, very, very well done. The only times that they had problems were when it came to budget, for the most part.
Yeah, because I feel like they tried to get a little bit more grand.
Yeah.
At a couple points, and then it just fell short.
Yeah, like the only one I really had a huge issue with, I think, was the Triwizard Tournament. When they did the movies for it, they just spent so much money with the CG on the dragons and other things that they, when they got to the maze for the last like challenge,
yeah,
they weren't able to put in everything that was in there. And I remember that being a very like one of the darkest things she's written.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a good section.
Yeah, I mean, there's supposed to be like a giant scorpion monster or something in there. I mean,
I haven't read all of the Harry Potter books.
Oh yeah,
I haven't seen all the movies. I've probably seen all the movies. I just don't remember them.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. You know, because they're hit or miss. There are people who are completely obsessed and invested in the series, and there are other people who are like, meh.
It's like, I think it's a good series. I feel like it deserves its cultural touchstone status.
Oh, yeah.
That it has. Because it's gotten to so many kids, and it's gotten them into so much literature, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
It's inspired people. It has provided so many hours of escape for so many different people. So, I mean, just because I'm not the biggest fan of it doesn't mean that it's bad.
Oh, yeah.
And just because I can see different flaws in it doesn't mean it's bad. Because if half the world loves it, I don't matter in that kind of context. No.
And I've read all the books. I haven't read any of that. I think there was like a new screenplay or a new book that did.
There's a couple different things. Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to any of those. I actually had the original Fantastic Beasts like book, but it was like a textbook on where to find these creatures, bios.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, as a kid, I loved that. I've seen all the movies. I'm updated with all the movies as well. And I found a lot of inspiration for it when I first did a campaign for my Far Leone campaign. When I started, it was supposed to be, where we're playing right now is set in the past.
Yeah.
And the actions that happened in this campaign that's happening were what affected what was happening in that campaign. So when I came back to it, I wanted to, let's do a prequel first and kind of get the backstory of why this big bad is in this one. And I started off, I wanted to do something weird and different. I had three players. They all kind of like spellcasters. So I was like, what if you guys start in the school? Like a Hogwarts kind of school where you're there for like 10 years and like almost an alternate dimension. You're surrounded by magic completely. You remember how you said something about me throwing a beholder at low level characters?
Oh yeah.
They had a beholder that was, like, locked up in, like, a dungeon under the school.
Oh, jeez.
And someone released it. And it was, like, it was experimented on, so, like, the anti-magic eye was, like, sewn shut.
Yeah.
And, like, the more deadly eyes were, like, sewn shut or chopped off. So it was, like, it was really, like...
It was a gimped beholder.
Yeah, it was definitely a gimped beholder. Like, there was no way they were going to survive at their level.
Yeah. Oh,
no way at all. And even the gimped out beholder almost killed them all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can throw a regular beholder at, like, a higher-level party, and it's still, like, oh.
One bad roll can destroy the entire party.
Yeah. It's just gone.
Yeah. So.
It's one of those things. It's a beholder is something that is always threatening.
Oh, they never won't be, either.
Yeah. It's always.
So, with that, like, I got so inspired by the school and everything to do that whole, like, let's start them off in the school. And they're all different types of spellcasters. And as soon as you guys leave the school, you can multi-class into something else or whatever you want to do. If you want to, like, add something more fightery or something, we'll work it out. But, like, what if you guys started here and we did, like, a bit of a murder mystery or a almost murder mystery in the school?
Yeah, I can definitely... Yeah, that would be awesome. And that is actually following with Harry Potter pretty well, too.
Yeah. That's where a lot of those players, you met a few of them, where they have that tick with lavender tea.
Yep.
Just a red herring that they created themselves and I just rolled with.
Yeah, don't you love it when that happens?
So every time I mention it, anytime I mention it, I would throw it into games. Just like, oh yeah, and the drinks. I'm like, oh, what are they drinking? Lavender tea. Like, all of a sudden, like, you see like their flashbacks to Nom.
Yeah, that's how you test how meta they're being.
Definitely. I'm going to investigate that guy with the lavender tea.
Yeah, why? No reason. So, you all set?
Yeah, I'm all set with mine. All
right. So, my last one is not too huge.
Okay.
Just because I don't have a whole lot of experience with it. But if there is one thing that I love about it is how it looks, is Deus Ex.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the one game I'm gonna try to be getting you into at some point.
I've wanted to play it too.
Yeah, no, it's, and if you play it, you'll feel like you're running around in a Shadowrun world that I designed.
Yeah.
Just because it is the, you have the lower class, and then you have crazy rich people.
Nothing in the middle.
And I was about to say, there's just, and like the middle class is maybe a plateau on the lower, like, fifth of that scale.
Okay.
And then the next up is, like, luxury class. And Deus Ex, you don't really explore how they're interacting with each other in the world all too much, so much as you just visually see.
Okay.
Yeah. You, like, visit the slums, and you visit the ghettos, and then you're traipsing through luxury-ass penthouses and are having to go do missions there. And in the luxury penthouses, everything is glitzy, everything is shiny, everything is crazy, crazy clean. As opposed to when you're in the slums or going through those houses or factories or warehouses, everything has a not too fine layer of dust and dirt. You got trash in the streets. You have hobos that are sitting on the sides of buildings. Everything is made out of busted brick or steel. And it's just the stark differences that I take for really anything that I do.
Yeah, you seem to like really pull a lot of inspiration from those and then put those into almost every game.
Oh, yeah. Just because I love the stark differences. Mm. Like when you guys were in the fighting pit.
Yeah.
In the first session or two of Shadowrun. It was, you guys were down in the pits and there was just nothing. It was just dirt. And then a ring. And then about 20, 30 feet up, everybody was in suits. Everybody was in masks.
The upper class. All the time.
Everybody was nice, clean press, clean cut, everything like that. And yeah, so I always love stark differences.
It's a shocking contrast.
Contrast. That's the word I couldn't think of. Oh, God, why couldn't I think of the word contrast?
I have a problem forgetting words constantly. It is a huge pain. But my last one is special, I guess, just because it is, I would say, my first real introduction to anything fantasy.
Okay.
I mean, as a kid, Disney movies, of course, were there.
Yeah.
But, like, I think what put me on the path of really loving this genre was the Charmed series. As a kid, I've seen every episode. Every episode of every season.
A couple times.
At least. 'Cause all the reruns and everything. Mm. And just that, you know, back to that underground magic element, this huge, epic, proportioned war between good and evil, and all the normal people just don't know about it.
Yeah. They're just not even cannon fodder. They're just food for the wolves.
Yeah, not even half the time, because even the side of evil was like, cover it up and keep it quiet, because you can't let the normal people know. It just would be bad for everyone in the end.
Yeah, just, nobody in the end would be having a good time with that.
And just that introduction to characters with magic and all that, just where, like, the witch character wasn't the evil, cackling woman who gives you an apple that's poisoned or whatever. Because Disney just hates witches.
Yeah.
Until Elsa. I don't care what anyone says. Elsa is a, like, water elemental witch. She has control over ice.
Waterbender.
Yeah. Essentially, that's what she is. But yeah, Charmed definitely was it for me. Like, it was great.
Just the intro into things like that.
Yeah, I think that's what it was for me.
I'm gonna have to do a Charmed episode and set it in Boston.
It would be really fun. Like, I liked a lot of their episodes where it's just like, it gives you this self-contained, here's the problem, here's them fixing it, and that makes for great campaign sessions.
Yeah, it really does.
When you're playing and you need to just kind of throw in that side mission, they really make it great, great use of that.
I gotta distract you guys for a couple of hours just so I can, because I don't have all the notes prepared for the real session yet.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have you go over here. I'm gonna have you find a...
Or even as a filler, where they think it's something completely unrelated to the main plot. This is no way in hell this is going to go back to the main problem. But then at the end, you know, the villain had something that puts them in relation to your big bad.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh no. It's all connected still. But
everything's green as people.
But that concludes our top tens.
Yeah, I was about to say, that about does it for me, unless I want to just go home and grab a bunch of my books and I'll just start reading off titles.
Well, I mean, I got some honorable mentions. Because we didn't mention Game of Thrones or Doctor Who.
Have not watched Doctor Who.
Oh, wow.
Believe it or not. I know, it's kind of weird.
I mean, I'm not... I really like the Doctor Who series. I haven't caught up on most of the last guy. Never mind the new woman who's playing it.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. But David Tennant was my favorite Doctor, my first Doctor. And it's a show where people... The fandom goes hard.
Oh, yeah.
The fandom goes hard, and if I were anyone else, I would have already had it up in front of you. Once you said you didn't watch it yet. I'd recommend watching, I think the episode's Blink, if you're ever going to get into it.
Is that that's the Weeping Angels?
Yeah, it barely has Tennant in it, but it has him in there, so it's so clever how they put him in, and how they made the episode, that it really hooks you into the show.
I've caught enough from,
pop culture?
Yeah, just getting basic references in pop culture kind
of
deal.
It's really good. It's fun, it's addictive to get into, you'll binge watch a lot of it. But I can't invest myself into a fandom that hard.
Oh, for anything. God, yeah, no, that's taking it to another level.
Because I know people who are they're in it to win it.
All right, yeah.
So, house cleaning.
Yes, house cleaning.
Thank you guys for listening. We have the Facebook page where you can get up-to-date information about the podcast, when things are coming out, and that's / Cursed Dice Studios. Facebook.com/CursedDiceStudios. We're also on Twitter.
We do the tweets.
Yep, we do the tweets. And that is at CDice Studios. Yes. We are also on Patreon right now. We also have our website, CursedDiceStudios.Weebly.com. You can head over there. We have a blog there as well where we put up update information. We're going to start adding more posts there as we build.
Adding more posts, that kind of that's an umbrella to all of the stuff, because we're just figuring this all out. I'm trying to find what to update.
Definitely.
What to update with or about.
So with that, we have another episode coming out for you guys next Monday. Hope to see you then.
All right. Have a good day, everybody.